Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman, joined by Mark Z. Always a great time.
Always, and having a great time.
Yeah, we've had a wonderful run this morning, and we're at the offices of Tarlow Breed, Hart & Rogers, our wonderful hosts for today. And our show is largely focused on the legal profession in various aspects, and that's also true of our next guest. Our next guest up is Pat Clendenin, Pat from Davis Mom. Welcome to Radio Entrepreneurs.
Thanks so much, Jonathan, and thank you, Mark, for having me again. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
And I know you're a veteran and soon to be more involved with Radio Entrepreneurs, and we're very excited about that. And,
I'm very excited about it as well.
Going to give you an opportunity to sit where Mark is sitting and fire the tough questions.
Well, that will be exciting. I am a war horse. I call my father the old war horse, so I'm getting there. Eventually, I'll be an old war horse, so thanks again for having me on the show.
I know that how that happens. As I said to my wife the other day, geez, that sounded a lot like my dad. I find it coming out of myself more and more, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, depending on the context. Anyhow, Pat, appreciate you coming on, and you wanted to talk a little bit about some initiatives geared towards change in civil litigation.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk and a lot of action over the last few years about changes in Massachusetts under the Superior Court rules and also federally with regard to the rules of civil procedure. Now, a lot of it has been driven by the realization that electronic discovery and electronic data has become so, it has exploded. And so in order to do a fair disclosure and discovery of each other's cards in litigation, that has led the federal courts and now the state court to get more involved in managing this process. For the listeners and for those of you who have had experience in litigation, it is a long, drawn-out, sometimes battle of attrition. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the changes and really provoke the question, is this going to be meaningful change, or is this just going to be old wine in new bottles? So I think I could start first by talking about how the court's role has evolved, particularly in the state courts, in terms of management of the cases.
That'd be great.
It's interesting. I was just going to interject because you talked about e-discovery and rules along that, and I would imagine what you're getting at is that just how voluminous, the production of documents and discovery is. And, it's certainly obviously challenging probably for attorneys to deal with. But when a client gets a bill and includes $4,000 for photocopies, you sort of scratch your head and say, why are we killing this many trees?
Exactly. And the technology is a real game changer for the courts and for lawyers. I think I've mentioned before that the service providers are much more sophisticated. So the costs of collecting, managing and then producing that information is coming down. But now we're in situations where you're also dealing with mobile devices. So with mobile devices and email and different email accounts, Dropbox, the courts have finally said, hey, we need to really have a collaboration on this process early on. So in the federal courts, typically you'll have this thing called the scheduling conference, and clients don't necessarily come to the scheduling conference, but it really is going to require a sea change in terms of how the lawyers interact with each other.
Right.
And Mark, you're an attorney, you've known lawyers for many years. Jonathan, you've been involved in litigation during your career. It's one of those processes, if well done, will save time and money. But the real question in my mind is, are we going through the motions with these processes, or are they real? And so
And the process sometimes feels like the tail wagging the dog.
The tail wagging the dog. And in some cases that I've worked on, it's been very good in the sense that the parties talk about, well, who are the witnesses? Where is information located? And you really start collaborating early to limit the number of witnesses, to limit the custodians in terms of where you're doing the searches and working collaboratively on the search terms,
right?
Which is kind of like taking calculus. I don't know if you guys took calculus in high school or college, but that's what devising search terms is like. And I always get involved because, and I think the courts are requiring lawyers to get involved because they have to know their own client's technology and they have to know what they're looking for. And often that can be a very good process. But in a recent case that I've had, it's been 4 months that we've been negotiating the electronic discovery protocol, and I haven't gone screaming into court and complaining because I want to really see if we can get it done. But that's not how the process is designed to work, because that's cost the clients money and time. But ultimately, what you want to do is get this case ready for trial.
Right. Right.
If the clients want to go to trial.
Right. And yet, the process is taking long to get through what I call the starting gate. You haven't even gotten through the gates to the starting block as yet.
The starting block. And in working with clients, sometimes it's a process that you have to, they have to understand that they have to preserve their electronic information. And there's a recent change to the federal rules that has, under Rule 37, where the court is less focused on sanctioning people for the destruction, but really trying to cure any intentional or unintentional destruction. And sanctions will only occur if there's some deliberate attempt to destroy, or what they call spoliation. It's like kind of a fun legal word that scares the daylights out of most clients. And so that's a positive trend, because you have the court saying, hey, let's work together. And the other significant change, and I, and part of me wishes Mark Furman was here, because it would be interesting to hear his perspective historically on this, is that they made a sea change in the federal court in terms of what is legitimately discoverable, and they've introduced this whole notion of proportionality. So you have a lot of rein in discovery, and as a client, I'm sure, Jonathan, you remember, you know, saying, well, why do we have to do this? Why do we have to do that? Well, because we don't know what we have or we don't have until we've asked the questions and we've sent the documents. But they've removed the language under the federal rules to cover information that's reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence, which is very broad, to parties may obtain discovery regarding any non-privileged matter that is relevant to any party's claims or defenses, which is, you look at the complaint, you see what their complaint claims and defenses are, and proportional to the needs of the case.
So it's not necessarily a fishing expedition anymore. It's really defining that, which is a good thing, because now resources can be properly focused on where the case is.
Exactly, Mark. And the notion that the big corporation, and I've represented big corporations that have devoted resources to cases. I've represented smaller companies or individuals in cases, and obviously their resources differ. So the judge and the lawyers really in this process are supposed to say, well, hey, how much is really doing this worth? How much is it going to cost? Should we get every phone? Should we do everything under the sun? And you weigh that against the importance of what you may find there. And so that's a good thing. But again, we're dealing with lawyers.
Right.
We're dealing with litigation. We're dealing with emotions. We're dealing with human beings. So whether or not that really affects a sea change and brings the cost of cases down significantly remains to be seen.
So is that left to the parties to negotiate out, or is that something that is imposed by the court? And does the court at some point look at the list of items for discovery and say, hey, this has no bearing on the case, strike it?
That's a great question. And one of the new changes, which Judge Saris mentioned, she's the chief judge of the United States District Court here in Massachusetts, and they had their open forum recently. So there is a requirement that the lawyers have to collaborate a lot before the first initial scheduling conference, where the court will impose a schedule on the lawyers and the parties to the case. And the lawyers are supposed to make those suggestions. But one of the new changes to the federal rules is that lawyers can serve requests for production of documents before the scheduling conference. So the judge and the parties will have those. And he or she will be able to go through the list and do exactly that, Jonathan. Say, hey, this.
That's great.
Or you know, we don't need this now, or do you really need this? And really try to focus the issues. So whether that, she said in front of, you know, hundreds of lawyers, that was very helpful. So it remains to be seen whether lawyers take advantage of that. But at the end of the day, you have to protect your client. So if someone's trying to take advantage of the discovery process to jack up the cost or create an undue burden, you have to go in before the judge and make your case. but from a practicing lawyer's perspective, you hear it all the time, is they hate discovery motions. So I want to hear a judge, a federal or state judge, say, I love discovery motions. I want to hear that someday. I don't think I will, but maybe I will.
I think it's so important that, especially a lot of times the plaintiffs and the defense have different budgets to make it more efficient, because I think that if you're a lot of times a defense, especially with a big firm, what they're going to do is try to paper you to death. And what it does is this limits in terms of discovery, as you say, with the focus and the scheduling. And I think the hopefully the judge will get more involved. But you're right. At the same time, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Exactly. And you have this tear because you want as much information as possible. But at the same time, a lot of lawyers, and I've talked to this with other lawyers, plaintiffs' lawyers, defense lawyers, they're all decrying this vanishing jury trial. And there's lots of theories. Some really good scholarship has come out in the last year. Professor Dennis Hale at BC has just published a book on the jury trial, and I'm planning to read that shortly, is that I get the sense from going to the forum the other day where all the judges, all 15, 16, and magistrate judges in the district court were kind of telling lawyers what they need to do,
right,
what they need to do better in civil and criminal cases. I get the sense that at this point in the history of civil litigation, that the gatekeeper role of judges is slowing down the process for very good reasons, in the sense that the Supreme Court has put a bigger burden on complaints under Twombly and Iqbal. So there's a lot more motions to dismiss that are filed early in the case, which take a lot of time in complex cases for the judges to decide. Then you have all the Daubert motions, which clog up a lot of time, usually late before trial. And then the one that all the judges mentioned at the recent open forum is summary judgment.
Right.
Which all of which are legitimate tools. You know, the Daubert motions were created by the Supreme Court, and they always existed to a certain extent, were designed to get junk science out of the courtroom. That if you have an expert witness, that he or she really needs to be an expert. So that's what those motions are designed to do. Summary judgment, designed to eliminate claims that shouldn't be tried because there's no material issue of fact and the moving party is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Very smart. And same thing with...
Although most attorneys would argue that summary judgment takes as much work as the whole case.
It does.
It's just in a condensed time frame.
It does.
Right. Right.
It does. And same with... And you hear some lawyers say, well, we need to educate the judge. We need to put our cards on the table, maybe get a favorable settlement. So all those are legitimate reasons to file motions for summary judgment. But the reality is the gatekeeper functions of the federal and state courts are slowing things down for legitimate reasons. But so that leaves us, the trial lawyers, our host at Tyler Breed Mark and me, saying, well, you know, litigation is fine, it's interesting, but we want to try cases and get juries in the box to decide questions that the clients decide need to be decided.
Right.
I go back to the early question, is this old wine and new bottles? Is this a merry-go-round? How do you all feel about it?
Well, it's interesting, and unfortunately, Pat, we don't really have time to get into all of it, but one of the questions that comes to mind for me, and I'm not sure there's an answer, is, with that said, we'll have to come back and discuss it again, but it seems to me that there ought to be tiers or thresholds, because I've often heard that unless you're dealing in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's generally not worth it to litigate, and that's probably true. And so, you know, I think the small claims system was devised to be able to deal with small matters, but I think that caps out at what, about $10,000 today, or
In the state court, I don't remember the number on jurisdiction for the district court versus the superior court, but it's a relatively low threshold,
right,
for diversity jurisdiction in federal courts. It's $75,000.
Right. So again, relatively small numbers. Mm-hmm. That if you're somewhere in that gap between, you know, if it's $10,000 or $20,000 in state court and, you know, $300,000, what do you, you know, you can't win. So it seemed to me some tiered system based on the size of the action might make sense, and, you know, condense the process, if you will.
It's a good suggestion.
Right. And the other thing, which I think that's a great idea, John, but the other thing is that because we've talked before, you and I, Pat, in terms of your role as a counselor, because today we found in my space that litigation, you still have a lot of litigation, but what it is at different stages, you have to advise your client, you know what, as John said, you've got to settle. Even if you're a passionate person that doesn't want to give up on it because you're being sued, or as a plaintiff, you really feel that there's more to what is happening and you're being papered to death, you reach a certain point about costs. And I think costs has become very big. And so you have to put on your counselor role at some stage. You can't, you don't want to win the battle and lose the war.
Exactly. And you know, with the rise of budgeting, particularly for even very sophisticated, well-heeled clients, there's a lot of budgeting that goes on in litigation. And there are times when you have to tell the client that to go to trial is going to cost you more than it will to settle, even if you have a good defense.
Yep.
You know, putting aside the risk of having a runaway jury, so to speak, which, you know, I think is largely doesn't happen. Usually juries do the right thing, in my experience, but not always. And I think one of the things that I find very helpful to get the parties to come to a resolution relatively quickly, particularly in business cases, when you're dealing with business people who are very good at assessing risk, who want to run their business, sell their products, perform their services, and not get bogged down in litigation, is mediation. And the federal judges and the state judges here in Massachusetts are very accommodating about that, will allow you to do some targeted discovery and then mediate for no charge. They'll assign a retired federal judge or a magistrate judge to mediate. And that's an option that I've recommended to clients many times. But like anything else, you have to get agreement. So
right.
If the other side says, no, we want to try this case,
you're back in the square.
You're back in, you know, hold on for dear life and hope we get there.
Right.
So I don't know if I've given you any answers today, Jonathan.
No, well, Pat, you know, that's what Radio Entrepreneur is all about, opening
about
up the discourse and having the dialogue around it. And I think it's a really fascinating area. You know, it's not like a lot of other things in this country. You know, reform is not easy. I think that whichever side of this political aisle, so to speak, you're on, I think people all agree we need to simplify what goes on in this country because, you know, everything's become cost prohibitive because there's so much process built into everything.
That's very
and
true.
Regulation, et cetera. And I think, you know, the litigation reform is no different. It needs to change because we're wasting a lot of people's time and money. And unfortunately, lawyers get a bad rap when all they're doing is following the rules that are laid out for them.
They're trying to protect their clients. They're trying to do a great job. And there are inherent constraints, technological, human, process, law, regulation, built into the process.
Absolutely. Well, wonderful having you on Radio Entrepreneurs, and thank you so much for coming out to Tarla Breedhart and Rogers. And Pat, why don't you remind our listeners, if they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to reach you at Davis Mom?
The best way to reach me is at pclendenin@davismom.com, and my telephone number, as Mark always asks me and reminds me to provide in this age, is 617-589-3878.
Wonderful. And remind our listeners that they can tune in to the Radio Entrepreneurs across the Radio Entrepreneurs Network. Go to our website, our social media sites, like us, follow us, and go to our YouTube channel where you'll see excerpts of Pat's interview as well as others. And welcome our listeners to join us on the Radio Entrepreneurs Network and come sit in the hot seat. Pat Clendenin, it's been a real pleasure having you on, and thank you once again for making the effort to come in today. And we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.